CliffCentral.com.
Well, he's been a hit on the show before, so we've got him back again for another episode of The Burning Platform. He is Dr. Jonathan Witt. It was also his birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Dr. Witt.
There you go.
Is that how you feel about your birthday?
Well,
I'll join you guys in a second. I just need to put a shirt on.
Oh my God!
Oh Lord!
Canthan,
we're off to a great start this morning.
A great start with Canthan half naked, and luckily he hasn't turned on his camera yet. But he'll put on a shirt, and then we'll be okay. All right. Yeah. So, first of all, there are lots of things that we need to discuss, and then there are a few things that we want to discuss. But the last time I checked in with you, Dr. Witt, we were talking about the U.S. elections and whether or not that's turned out good, bad, or ugly. We'll discuss in a minute. Canthan, how nice to see you with a shirt on.
Yes, well, I couldn't really do that to your esteemed viewers.
What about us?
There's enough toxic masculinity going around without us doing that.
So, all right, let's start off with, because we're wrapping up the year and it's been just an unbelievable record-breaking year in so many ways, and not all good ways. Are you guys relieved that we're coming to the end of it? Do you think 2021 is going to be any better? Or are we fooling ourselves by putting this ridiculous arbitrary calendar date in and thinking that 2021 is going to be a dream by comparison? It obviously isn't. We're going to have a hangover from 2020 and it might last a lot longer. Or am I being cynical?
I think it's your job to be cynical.
Yeah. What were you saying, Jonathan?
You're fooling yourself thinking that anything's going to change. The reality is that government is about to try and escalate things again, as really Mkhize said last night. Mm. And the lockdown ain't going nowhere, and it may very well get worse again. 2020 is going to continue into 2021, and the economic damage that's been done is going to continue, and then we're going to start feeling it on top of that. We're going to have just the same problems, in my opinion.
Well, let's just start with something that I've seen you've been going crazy about on social media, Jonathan, because we talked about it. Pumi and Sian Bulelo and I were talking about rage just a minute ago and how that's been called a super spreader event. Do you believe that there is such a thing as a super spreader event? And what is the reason for you getting so uptight and angry about rage? Tell us how you feel.
Well, the problem is that there's no definition for a super spreader event. So as things stand, a super spreader event is, you know, if Republicans gather together in the United States, that's a super spreader event. If Donald Trump does anything, it's a super spreader event. If the EFF march by clicks, by the hundreds, that's not a super spreader event. If BLM march, that's not a super spreader event. But if a few kids go down to rage, middle-class children, and have fun for a week, that's a super spreader event. So this is the problem I have, which is inconsistency, and that there is actually no definition for a super spreader event. Certainly it's possible, and we know this from restaurant dining, for example. That it's possible that one of them is sick with any respiratory virus and you have certain types of air conditioning systems and airflow, it's possible that a number of people then get sick as a result of that interaction.
Except, Jonathan, it not true that these rage events are in fact outdoor events?
Yeah, so I mean, I'll get onto rage now, Canthan, because the freak out about rage is completely ridiculous. So before 7 o'clock, you had someone who sent through a message, which is absolutely accurate, which is that this is an event that takes place countrywide every year and has done for more than 20 years now. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that these are kids who've just finished exams, so they're de-stressing. They go down, they drink. They smoke, they're partying, they're singing, they're kissing, they're staying up until late at night. And in my experience, from a medical perspective, there are plenty of kids who come home from rage sick. Mm-hmm. This is just simple as that. And the reality is that I think most of them have followed that pattern this year, and they haven't come homesick with corona, in my opinion. They've come home sick with flu. And the reason I say that is because the claim from the media and the claim from all the people shrieking is that the majority of these children have come back with symptoms, except for the fact that coronavirus is 80% asymptomatic. So how is it possible that rage suddenly caused a symptomic coronavirus spread when coronavirus is asymptomatic?
So how come so many of these little pressures are being tested positive? Or are they?
I don't know.
Again, what does tested positive mean? Does it mean that you're actually infected? Does it mean that you're capable of spreading the infection? The answer to that is no. It's in fact showing up that you've been testing. Okay, go for it, Jonathan.
Let's start out with the first proposition, which is that a whole bunch of kids on Sunday morning, we get told, have tested positive and Rage was a super spreader event. Except I went and asked the organizers of Rage in Balito. Firstly, let's remember that government posted fake, literally fake news as part of a release in which they said that Rage Plet, Rage Balito, Rage Johannesburg, and Rage somewhere else, I can't remember the fourth one, but they listed four, had caused super spreader events and caused the coronavirus spike. Three of those events never happened, and no journalist took it upon them to question why the government had outright lied. And that lie has been allowed to stand. Mm. So that's the first point. The second thing is, if you go and ask the organizers of Rage, what actually happened is a number of kids went down on holiday last week, at the beginning of last week.
Right.
And then the official Rage event was on Friday night. And a number of the events were cancelled, by the way. But the one that took place by the organizers was on Friday night. It was meant to be in Balito. It was then moved to Kings Park. It was then moved from Kings Park to a club across the road. Kings Park, by the way, would have been outdoors, but the government chose to move them to cancel that event. So they moved them indoors. Now, the point is that the official Rage event that happened was on Friday night. We wouldn't have known about any positives until earliest yesterday, Wednesday. So the idea that on Sunday they were saying Rage had caused a super spreader event, the only thing that could have caused infection spread supposedly could have been kids going on holiday together. So if that's the argument, then holidays for everyone need to be shut down. Because I don't know about you, but I know lots of people going to Cape Town. It's going to be packed this year.
And absolutely Durban.
So we must now point fingers at the kids. This is absolute nonsense. And the reality is that no official Rage event caused a super spreader event. If you want to claim that there was a super spreader event from Rage, it was as a result of children going down on holiday. Now, in terms of the testing, apparently there's a whole bunch of kids tested positive, and I'm aware of a few children that have tested positive myself, including one of my relatives who's received death threats. I might add an 18-year-old child receiving death threats.
Why is someone getting death threats for?
Because the community is absolutely and unbelievably ridiculous, and basically their behavior is unacceptable. The kids have received death threats. The parents, similarly.
What are you talking about?
Sorry, Jonathan.
Why would someone threaten someone who's... Yeah, what is that?
The community that these people are involved in, wherever they happen to be. Their school communities.
Oh, okay.
Those communities, that is what is happening currently in those communities. Those parents are being admonished. They're being treated like lepers for allowing their children to have a break after possibly one of the worst years of their life for an event they all look forward to for several years of their life. It is absolutely unacceptable. But on the point of positive testing, I would ask people to go and have a look at something called the Common Drosten Review. There was a paper released earlier this year when COVID was coming out, and they were deciding how exactly we were going to diagnose COVID. And what happened was there was a paper published and it said, well, we'll use PCR testing. That seems to be the most reliable way. And that paper was a little bit suspicious in the sense that because obviously there was a rush around COVID, that paper was submitted to the journal where it was published, a large journal called Eurosurveillance. It was submitted to that journal and published within 24 hours. That is not normal for peer review. At all. Peer review usually takes minimum a couple of months. Anyway, it was published overnight. Subsequent to that, a number of leading pathologists, immunologists, etc., have taken a look at that paper and have looked at the problems with PCR testing for this specific virus and have found major issues, one of which is that we're running high cycle rates when we run PCR, because PCR is essentially a replication test, and you keep doubling the amount of stuff you found on the swab until eventually the machine goes ping. The problem is that the more you double something, you create exponential growth, and then eventually you can get artifact, which looks like positive, but isn't in fact positive. And the problem is that PCR tests, before we had SARS-CoV-2, we knew you don't run PCR tests at more than about 30 cycles. Otherwise, you start getting a lot of false positives. Most of the world, including South Africa, is running cycles between 35 and 40. At above 35 cycles, you are getting up to 97% false positives.
Wow.
Now, that doesn't mean you always get 97% false positives, but up to. So the test becomes incredibly unreliable.
Right.
All right. And that's something to understand about the testing. And frankly, if so what's happened is with this Kalman-Drosten review is that all those scientists have submitted a review to the journal and asked for the paper to be taken down. And to be retracted. If that happens, understand that everything we've done for the past 10 months will fall apart.
Because the testing falls apart.
Well, if the testing falls apart, the cases fall apart. Right. If the cases fall apart, the vaccine falls apart, because the vaccine was based on PCR testing.
So let me ask Pumi and Kanthan here. If we do, and certainly it looks like government are building up to this, whether the testing is accurate or not, whether they've got their own agenda going on here. If we go into another kind of lockdown, or we do what Europe and America have done, and we stop events and we stop people from moving around and we stop selling certain things again, do you think that that's going to help? I mean, do you think they're being duplicitous here?
I think they're just being clueless. You know, never attribute to malice what is best explained by incompetence, as I'm fond of saying.
Pums, you're smiling. What does that mean?
No, you know, I'm so glad we get to have a conversation with the medical professional. And this is one of the things that I've wished for over the past couple of months. Jonathan, in your view, what would be the best way, given where we are now? Right. So we do have cases. We do have a particular environment that, as you say, any respiratory illness would be spread in. So what would be the in your view, what would be the best way to deal with the situation we are in now, where we know we have a lot of immunocompromised people? We know we have overcrowding in a lot of places in this country, and we know that we have a collapsed healthcare system. What would you do differently?
I think it's an important question, because it's fine to be to find the response problematic, but if you don't have an alternative,
right,
that's an issue. So I'm not sure if you're aware of something called the Great Barrington Declaration. It was something that came about couple of months back now. Harvard professor, Yale professor, Oxford professor, and Stanford professors got together, together with a number of other groups sort of backing them, and they sort of looked at this problem based on the evidence we had up until that point, which was around beginning of October, and said, well, what's working, what doesn't? So like lockdowns, for example, have not been shown to be effective based on data. So the reality is that we seem to have abandoned a basic understanding of biology. Most university kids are going through a rage. In 6 months' time, when they've done a little bit of biology at a university level, they'll be able to tell you that humans have never beaten any viruses except for smallpox. There are thousands of viruses. We do not beat viruses. Viruses make their way through populations until they are finished making their way through populations. And then they essentially stay dormant and occasionally will infect one or two people who come along the way, and there'll be small outbreaks where they are able to jump between people who are unexposed or haven't had a vaccine, which is, so we just talk about herd immunity. A vaccine is just fake herd immunity here. In March on the Renegade Report, I said specifically as a thought experiment, because it was a controversial statement at the time, it might still be, but the reality is we should be doing what just happened at Rage. we should be wanting as many young people to get infected as possible, because you cannot stop the virus. If I say to you, we essentially have a situation where we have 100 people in a room, and 10 people are age 0 to 10, and 10 people are age 11 to 20, and 10 people are age 21 to 30, and so on, all the way up to 100. And what is going to happen is a virus is going to be released into the room. And what you know about the virus is that it will most likely, the people it's most likely going to kill are the people over 70. And the people who are most likely going to be fine are the people under 50. And you have the option to put 30 people into the corner of the room very far away, and you have the option to allow the other 70 to mingle. Which 70 are you going to choose? And the answer is the people that are age 0 to 70 with this specific virus. If this was a normal flu virus, you'd be protecting the 0 to 10s, because children, especially babies, can die from flu.
Right.
But that's not the case with this virus. The reality is understand, so that's what I would do. For me, if I was the government, I'd be sponsoring music festivals, and I would have been sponsoring music festivals for the past 10 months where nobody over the age of 30 was allowed, but everyone above the age of 30 was allowed. And additionally, I wouldn't have wasted my money on the military to abuse human rights and to harass people in townships. What I actually would have done was I would have taken that money and I would have given it to the hotel groups, and I would have said to anyone who's over the age of 70, if you are unable to stay alone because you live with your family in a small house, or because you have no other option, you will have a room at the hotel where you can isolate. And I would have isolated the elderly. And even Sweden, who will have zero excess deaths this year, okay, zero. Sweden will not have any more deaths than they would have had in any other year on average. Even they who have done most of the things right admit that at the beginning what they did wrong was that they did none of these measures, and they didn't pay attention to their elderly. And then where they did get deaths was in their old age homes. All of these rage kids, even if it was a super spreader event, the truth is you should be hoping it was a super spreader event where every single child there French kissed every single other child and they all ended up with corona somehow. Because the reality is that is going to be a few thousand kids, i.e. people, who now have been exposed, who now are immune. And that is a few thousand less older people who have to get this virus, and those are the people who are likely to die. So that's really what our approach should be.
Jonathan,
I know it's radical, but
you just said now, I mean, this is interesting. Dogoza says, can we ask Jonathan if I'm immune now, if I've had COVID already?
Yeah, you are. But so the evidence we have is that so far, because the evidence is only 7 or 8 months old.
Yeah.
The evidence so far is that you're immune for at least 7 months.
So someone said the other day, and there's so much that you don't know what to believe here. That's why I'm glad Pumi said to you, well, finally, we can ask you direct questions about this and hopefully get answers that are valuable that we can incorporate into our own understanding of how this thing works. But I hear a lot of stories from people who say, oh, no, but I got it a second time and it's much worse. Is that anecdotal and
yeah,
useless?
It's anecdotal. So we have evidence that 27 people in the whole world have ever got it twice.
Evidence.
So evidence that only 27 people have ever got it twice. So it's plausible because of what Canton said, which is that you can get this virus three ways. Okay, remember that the problem as well, which is another issue I have with the media, is that they say COVID cases. So if you go right now onto ENCA's website, you'll see that we've had 760,000 or something COVID cases in South Africa. Mm. But we haven't had COVID cases because remember when they were trying to name the disease and they were doing everything they could to avoid calling it the Wuhan virus, because mm-hmm. that's what it should have been called,
yeah.
because that's where it came from, like all other viruses. And they then came up with this weird sort of nomenclature, COVID.
Yes.
And which didn't include the region. And D in COVID stands for disease. And D as disease in medical terminology means that you have to present with a certain cluster of symptoms or signs mm-hmm. in order to be classified as having a disease. I cannot say you've got cancer because of a blood test, for example. And there are blood tests for cancer. I still have to find the cancer. You haven't
exactly
been diagnosed
right.
on a blood test.
In the same way that you cannot say that you've got AIDS if you test HIV positive.
That's right. And remember, HIV causes the disease AIDS. So here we have SARS-CoV-2, the virus, causing COVID. And so the reality is that what can happen when you get SARS-CoV-2 is that it comes into your airway and it hits some of the cells in your nasopharynx. And option one is that your external immune system that's based there, your IgA, goes, okay, there's a virus that's presenting to the immune system, to the cell. Yeah. I'm going to kill this virus. And then your immune system takes care of it and it never actually enters your body. But if someone were to do a swab at that time, they would find virus on your nasopharynx, but you have never been infected with the virus. The other option is that it gets inside your cell, and because of cross-reactivity to other viruses, because we've had other coronaviruses,
sure,
this is not a new virus, it's just a new type of the same species,
right?
We have cross-reactivity whereby your body goes, I don't know this virus exactly, but I recognize it from its cousin, and so I'm able to attack it based on that recognition. And then your body attacks it and kills it and never spreads systemically. And then the third option is that you do get the systemic spread of the virus, and then you get generally systemic disease. And then most people, 99.98% of people mount an immune response, which will then render them perfectly fine and subsequently immune.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's basically going on. So if you got the virus a second time, there's a few options of why that is. But anything from a false positive test to you were never actually infected with the virus the first time around or the second time.
Look, and I think it for me, sorry, Jonathan, if it sounds like an interview, this is also an opportunity to then have a conversation about individuals, right? So all of us. We were just talking about what you do with your Christmas lunches and all of that stuff. So your view is that go ahead and have your big Christmas lunch with all of the various people, keep the old people away and the little people away, and hope that somebody in there has COVID.
Yeah, don't keep the little people away. The little people will be fine. I mean, the little people are absolute soldiers. They're the front line of this war, and they're absolute heroes. Every single one of those kids at Rage is a hero. But here's my view is that you need to understand what we have right now is we have a forest with a lot of dry tinder, and SARS-CoV-2 was a new type of fire, and it got lit at the one end of the forest, and essentially it's a wildfire, and there is no way to control the wildfire. You can try these lockdown things, but all you're doing is you're isolating small sections, and the minute you unlock down, that fire will come across into that area anyway, mm-hmm. if it even stops. You know, the idea of stop the spread, you cannot stop the spread of a virus. It's never been possible to stop the spread of a virus. As I mentioned, the only one we've managed to do that with is smallpox through mass vaccination. Even polio, we haven't fully been able to do it yet. And even if this vaccine works 100%, we're not going to be able to do a SARS-CoV-2 because it's not 100% effective. So the reality is that that's what we should be doing on a public policy level. We should be saying we understand that aspect.
Right.
For me as an individual and with someone who's very much aligned with believing in liberty and individual choice, I think that we are 10 months into something that the whole world knows about now. You know, even the most sort of backwater places, even the most uneducated people know there's a virus and know that you're meant to take all these sort of precautions against the virus. We can talk about whether any of those work, but they know it. And so why are we not allowing people to have free choice? You know, the argument against Rage is, oh, all these kids went and got sick, and I go, well, so what? They're kids, they got sick, they have a 99.9994% chance of survival. And people go, well, you know, they'll go home and infect grandma. So, okay, if that is true, why are they going home to grandma? Then just either they mustn't go on Rage in the first place if you know they live with 85-year-old grandma. That's your personal decision to make in your family. Or don't expose them to grandma. You shouldn't be exposing grandma already.
Yeah, but
so
why,
all the elderly people in my life.
But the question is, why would
I've
you
told them,
why
careful.
Would you want Zweli Mkhize involved in that? Surely you can make those decisions.
Well, 100%. You should be able to make those decisions. And it's weird that the public isn't seeing that since Zweli Mkhize has had COVID well, he's had SARS-CoV-2, and Gwede Mantashe has had SARS-CoV-2, and several of the top politicians in our country, Alan Windey included, who's acting like an absolute moron in the Western Cape, has had SARS-CoV-2. All of these guys have had the virus. They're all old. They're all, inverted commas, immunocompromised, because age is the biggest factor of immunocompromise. And they're fine. They're absolutely fine. And the reality that we can't seem to see in front of our own eyes is that, yes, there's a virus. Yes, it kills some people, unfortunately. But at the end of the day, it's no much greater than viruses we've dealt with in the past. And we really just need to get on with it, because even those people who are supposedly at high risk have an incredible chance of survival. What do you think? Donald Trump is not a healthy man. And he survived COVID. Rudy Giuliani is not a healthy man. He survived COVID. That fat former governor of New York, New Jersey. I can't remember his name, but the guy is like 400 pounds.
Governor Christie.
Chris Christie.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy can barely walk properly. There's a picture of him on a beach chair that was almost collapsing underneath him when he closed down the beaches and sat there with his family. You know, the reality is that you are imminently likely to survive COVID. And we seem unable to tear ourselves away from the one case we heard about that died, from the one youngster we heard about that died. And that seems to be illogical.
Yeah, but people are illogical. Look at what's going on in Britain and in Europe, because they're behaving like this is the first time they've ever had an existential threat in their lives. And for many of these people, it is the first time they've had an existential threat. They want someone to protect and guard them and look after them and make sure that they're safe, as if that world ever existed where you were totally safe before. And somehow they think government has the power to stop a virus. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy for the others to talk, because the truth is that's a philosophical discussion, which I absolutely agree with.
Maybe we should move on, because there are other things going on. I see, by the way, Pumi, this is a big bugbear of yours and Canton's. South African Airways have taken another step towards returning to the skies. How excited we are. The Public Enterprises Department, under Pravin Gordhan, who was eviscerated by Dalimpofu the other day at the Zondo Commission, among other things.
Communist Prime.
The Public Enterprises Department has appointed 6 non-executive directors for an interim board. It's amazing how they go straight to appointing the directors first, because, you know, that's a way to get caterers paid. But the airline, the ailing airline, looks like it might come back into existence. It might shake off its zombie clothes and come back to life. How do we feel about this? Any changes in your opinions, Pumi and Canton, and then we'll go to Jonathan for his opinion on this.
Look, I think it's just one of the more visible forms of corruption. So let's have it out in the open so that we can keep interrogating it. At least that way we'll be able to follow where this particular money trail is going to, as opposed to all of the other money trails that we know nothing about. And they're going to steal. They're going to carry on stealing until we vote them out.
They'll find a way of making COVID responsible for SAA as well, won't they?
Probably at some point, yes.
Pumi, you seem exasperated.
There is no new because there is no new information that is being presented that will allow me to change my mind. All the facts remain the same.
Yeah, think of us as the Supreme Court. We refuse to hear this case because there's nothing new being presented.
What about Ace Magashule and what we see going on there? Jonathan, by the way, did you have anything to say about SAA, or do you just concur?
No, I concur with Pumi. It's an absolute disaster, and we should be walking away, but we know why we can't or won't.
So let's talk about Ace Magashule and the fact that the ANC had this NEC meeting. He said, and of course he'd say this, it was a great meeting, and everybody had their point of view, and then afterwards we collectively, it's always an important word in the ANC, because then you don't have to be blamed individually. We collectively came to the decision that I don't need to step down as Secretary General.
Well, we've had this discussion on this show. You know, the ANC is entitled to pay whoever they employ. He doesn't need to step down. He's not in public office. So why should we care? It's no big deal.
Although I think that there is something new, or rather a remix of an old thing that did come out of the NEC.
What's that?
This one, the pharmaceutical, the state-owned pharmaceutical entity, right? So did you see that notice coming out?
No, Jonathan, I've completely missed this.
It's hilarious.
This directly impacts your profession, young man.
Yeah, so, well.
What is Hugo. It? Tell me what it is.
So I mean, remember, I've long had the theory that the ANC government only operates by seeing which sector of the industry they haven't yet looted, and then they start looting that industry, and then they suck the life out of it. It's like War of the Worlds was the film where the aliens arrive, and then they basically destroy the planet and suck all the life out of it, and then they move on to the next planet. Mm-hmm. And the ANC does the same with industry. So they hit mining about 10 years ago, and then they suck the life out of it, and now it's dead. They've realized that drugs are actually quite lucrative. People need them. And so what they're going to do is they're going to essentially socialize pharmacy, pharmacare. So, the state is going to take over the means of production. They're going to start a pharmacy company. And then, of course, they own a whole bunch of hospitals. Competition Commission won't have any problem with them buying drugs from their own pharmacy division. And then what they'll do to Adcock Ingram and so is they'll say, well, if you want to carry on operating, what you'll do is you'll manufacture these drugs for us at the price we tell you, which is similar to what they want to do with NHI. Mm-hmm. Basically,
it's kind of like bakeries during the apartheid era.
How did those
work? No one could afford bread. Eventually it got to that point because, you had government regulated bread loaves and everyone was forced to bake bread only in that particular shape and size. And all the bakeries went out of business and the price of bread went through the roof. And, now thanks to that, we're able to get low GI, rye, wheat, challah bread for you, Jonathan.
But I think what is also quite astounding is coming out of that NEC, and Cyril Ramaphosa makes this huge pronouncement and statement on the 8th or whatever, on Monday, about it, only to, if you just dig a little bit through the back files, what you will find is that in 2016, Jacob Zuma came out and said the exact same thing. And in fact, what did happen after 2016 is they did set up a pharmaceutical entity, which kind of, has a website and all of that stuff, but hasn't really seen the light of day. So there are two things that you've got to be like, So you're resolving to set up something you already have. Mm. What?
Yeah, well, just, the specific words, by the way, just for those who haven't been following. So this is from the report that came out of that NEC. Noted the initiatives by government to participate in the African Vaccine Trials Initiative to acquire vaccine stocks for South Africans and confirmed the need to have further discussions on the issue of access. So in other words, they're going to do nothing in the short term on that. Then the NEC calls for expediting of conference resolution on the establishment of a state-owned pharmaceutical company as part of the Africa-wide drive to ensure greater self-reliance. Now, again, understand, this was 3 years ago, and they haven't moved on it at all. Because,
this doesn't worry me.
Go back to our incompetence.
I say best laid plans. I mean, I'm never concerned when the ANC come up with an idea like this, because it stays an idea forever.
Well, but this is the part that we should be worried about. The NEC further takes note of the global inequities in a profit-driven pharmaceutical sector. Now, consider that this profit-driven pharmaceutical sector is what has created a state of unprecedented good health for the human race.
And just developed a vaccine in 8 months for all the exactly. reservations I have about that vaccine.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, yes.
But don't worry. Praveen Gordon, who is a pharmacist, I think, by profession, he'll go back into the lab and he'll figure out how to make life-saving drugs for us because he's got so much spare time.
For me, they're phases, and I think for me, the reason why they've made a thing about it now is because it allows them to start legislating on it. And once you start legislating on it and, you put in a law that says, for example, all primary health clinics will buy their drugs from the National Pharmaceutical Agency, then that changes the game completely. But I feel like there's different phases that go on with this process. And phase one is sort of setting up a structure and, you know, buying office space in Midrand, and hiring a whole staff. And then you've sort of paid 400 caterers. You know, you've got 400 caterers on payroll.
Exactly.
And if it doesn't go beyond that, at least you've got 400 on payroll and that's 400 more that you didn't have before. And then if you're able to sort of take it to the next level where you take it a little bit further and you sort of make a national body, now you've got 1200 or 1500 on payroll. And if it doesn't go any further, as you say, Gareth falls apart, that's okay. You still got 1500 on payroll. And if you get all the way to making this like a national thing where everyone has to use it and it actually becomes like almost a semi-functioning organization,
yeah,
then you've got obviously billions rolling in every year. And if they say every Panado tablet that gets bought by every clinic across the country has to come from their supply chain, that is just on one tablet is probably a few billion rand a year.
Yes, but all that will end up happening, and this is what's so revolting about when you hear things like this taking place in various industries and various sectors, is that the poor people are the ones who fall victim to this stuff. Because rich people will find ways of doing it that go above and beyond what government mandates. And, you know, government have this idea, governments all over the world have this idea that when they promulgate legislation, that that's going to result in whatever their intention is. Of course, it doesn't. Because it results in two different streams. It results in a stream where ordinary poor people who are struggling through life and depend on certain things from the state are left to their own devices or end up being victims of the system. And then other people who are rich and independent of government who end up finding their own way of doing things, which falls outside of government's scope anyway. So all they do is they create more inequality and inequity. Not less.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. I think if you look at a lot of the decisions that our government has made, we can go back to COVID again. The reality is the people who've been most hardest hit are the poor. Most of the policy decisions have hit the poor the hardest. Even the stuff that the ANC has done did well over the first 15 years. House building, for example, was still a bad strategy for the poor because they built houses that they never gave title deeds to. So, you know, the house is great when you first move in, but you can't really do anything with it because you can't leverage it as an asset. There's this constant sort of ownership of the poor because the truth be told is I think most of these people think that the poor are too stupid and ignorant and can't think for themselves. The reality is we're in a COVID situation because it's the middle classes turning around and going, the poor can't be trusted to deal with this virus. We have to tell them what to do.
So patronizing. Can I just quickly get us onto a subject that came up this week? There are some interesting reports put out by a financial services company that figured out that during lockdown, 42.7% of small and medium-sized enterprises in South Africa have been liquidated, are finished, are out of business. 42.7%, almost half the small businesses in South Africa have been wiped out over the last 8 months. That is frightening. That means unemployment is going to skyrocket because those are the businesses, by government's own words, who are going to give people employment. Can't be the big corporations or the state-owned entities. It has to be the small businesses. If almost half of our small businesses have been wiped out, this is really something, this is a major problem. This is something that is a national disaster. If there is a national disaster act, it should be brought to bear on things like this. Do you see a way of solving this problem, Pumi, Canton, Jonathan?
No, there's no way of solving this problem. Remember, we've been talking for the past couple of months about the fact that for most people, the economic crunch from the devastation to our GDP has not yet hit most people, but it is going to come. So, you know, going back to our original point, is 2021 going to be worse? Yeah, 2021 from the point of view of the economy is going to be a lot worse because those businesses, once they shut down, they'll never come back. Remember that a lot of these places started off because people essentially quit their jobs, took their retirement funds, used it to do things like I franchised for a fast food chain, set up in a shopping center, and were able to generate a reasonable salary for a family group, which was going pretty fine up until the time that COVID hit and the lockdown happened. And those businesses are now shut down. They have been liquidated. But there is no more a nest egg of the pension fund to go back to that they can now invest in order to be able to start up again. and no bank is going to be able, willing to advance the money to them to give them that cash injection. So that business is dead. It is never going to come back.
But also COVID notwithstanding, guys, COVID notwithstanding, we have had an economy in decline for a number of years now. If we look at the statistics of the number of companies being deregistered by the CIPC, even before COVID, we were already in a bad state. And what we don't have is we don't have fresh ideas. We don't have fresh ideas of how to revitalize the economy, COVID or not.
Oh, no, no, no. There's no shortage of fresh ideas, Bumi.
In our government.
Yes, exactly. No, government have access to those ideas as well. They're fully aware of what needs to be done to fix it. But that will destroy the rent seeking that keeps them in business. So they're not going to do it.
And
for that reason.
I think that's valid.
And I feel that we also reward, and one of the reasons we've had such bad decision making during COVID, and I remember, I mean, Jonathan and Pumi and Canthan, we all had these discussions back in March and in April when it was tremendously unpopular and we were all accused of not caring about people's lives. When we said that the real result of all of this is going to be economic devastation. Forget about the few deaths that we're going to have from COVID. We're going to have many millions more because people are going to be plunged into poverty and deprivation, which is exactly what has happened, I will say. But there seems to be an incentive for government to make bad decisions because it looks like they're doing something. And this is the case for Britain. It's the case for the US. It's the case for South Africa. It's the case for all governments all over the world. Their incentive is we've got to be seen to be doing something. So even if it's the wrong thing, at least people won't accuse us of outright murder. And I think the same goes for the economy, is they've gone, well, we've got to lock down.
Gareth, you give them too much credit. I mean, we have accused them of outright murder. Yeah, you know, Exhibit A, Marikana, and they don't give a shit.
Yeah, it's true.
I think this is a two-sided coin, though, you know, what you're referring to. Because the one is that government, you know, I don't think they're so innocent. I agree with Canthan. They don't give a shit what they do to the public. Corona is an example. Panda released one of their first things they released, we released, was on around the 1st of May, ironically, Workers' Day, saying that the economic devastation was going to lead to 30 times more year lives lost than actual COVID. We did that as a conservative estimate, and we turned out to be absolutely correct. The year lives lost are going to far exceed that as a result of the economic devastation and all the things that come along with that because of a government that doesn't understand that an economy is interconnected. But I also think that the other side of that coin is that people need to stop believing the government is their daddy. You cannot break yourself free from this unless you want the government to take care of you and to take care of everything. And we have globally, frankly, an issue where people are not willing to take individual responsibility. And you look at labor laws, for example. The reality is one of the things that could easily fix a lot of our problems is if we dissolved most of our labor laws. None of the ones that prevent slavery and all those things. I'm fully in support of those. But the ones that say I can't hire and fire you as I please. And the ones that say you can't be hired and fired as you can, well, hired and walk away from a job as you please. You know, the realities are if we took those away, a lot of the problems disappear. But the government is unwilling to do that. And frankly, I think a lot of the public would view that as a problem. When I discuss this idea with people, they are very intransigent on it. And so until people are willing to accept that government is not their parent, and that they are a grown adult who must look after themselves. And government's essential role is to make sure that if they are gunned down in the street, that someone is brought to justice for that. And that is basically government's role. That's it. That's all. Government's role is not to make sure you have a roof over your head. Government's role is not sure to make sure you get fed or to make sure that your employer was fair with you. If they weren't fair, go to the court and take them on. Well, but other than that, you know, this idea that government and fortunately, it's being pushed globally. I mean, it's not just South Africa. Look at the WF's Great Reset. You know, they had an actual advert that said, you will have nothing and you will be happy. So, you know, the whole world in terms of government, globalism says that governments must look after the people and the people must not worry about anything. That is their ultimate view. And if you take that ultimate view, then you must be happy with what you get.
Yeah, I think that there's increasingly opposition to that point of view, though. And there are more people all over the world every day who are starting to say, no, you know what, frankly, I think we'd rather make our own decisions, whether it comes to our health, whether it comes to our own vision of what the economy should look like, and how we'd like to raise our children, frankly, because even that's become something controversial. Can we quickly turn our attention? I know that it is a bugbear of yours, Jonathan. I haven't heard from you in a long time about the U.S. elections, and I must be honest with you, I haven't been on social media that much lately. What's going on? When is D-Day, and when will we know what the hell's happening in terms of a final result here? Because Joe Biden is now appearing in front of banners that say the office of the president-elect. Donald Trump is not conceding. We don't know what the state of play is in those six states which were meant to have declared ages ago: Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Nevada. What's going on?
What's going on? Look, I am to the supposed tinfoil hat wearer here. What's going on is that an election has been fiddled with, and we're being told to ignore that. We're being told that you must pretend like this never happened. Look, here are
Jeez,
a couple
Jonathan,
of...
Jonathan, you know what's going to happen now? YouTube is now going to
deplatform
this video.
Look, firstly, what's actually happening is that there is something called the safe harbor date, which is when the states are meant to sort of verify all their results. That was on the 8th. But that's not a constitutional date. It's just a sort of traditional date. There's then the electors are meant to sit on the 13th or 14th, also not a constitutional date. The only constitutional date is the 20th of January. The new president has to be sworn in on the 20th of January, and if he isn't, there will be a constitutional crisis. In my view, that will still be Joe Biden. There are some court cases obviously going on. Important to note that the Pennsylvania court case didn't get rejected by the Supreme Court. They just basically said that they weren't going to hear it as an urgent matter. So we might find out.
And the other thing we need to point out is that Pennsylvania court case was not a Trump court case.
Yes. So
it was brought by other people. Yes.
We may very well have that court case a year into the Biden presidency and find out that the Biden win in Pennsylvania was not actually legitimate. And good luck to American democracy then. Because if you think this it doesn't have huge ramifications down the line, it will. The other court case that's coming along is the one that Texas is taking to the Supreme Court, which has to be heard. Mm-hmm. Because by law, if any state takes on any other state, that has to be heard at the Supreme Court level. And that's been joined by 17 other states or 16 other states, including Texas. And that's going to be heard in terms of voter laws. Now, when I say the election was fiddled with, this is what I mean. If I told any South African that the way we were going to run elections next year, the local government elections or a presidential one, a national one, if I told everyone, look, what we're going to do is because of COVID, we don't want people gathering at voting stations.
Right.
So what we're going to do is we're going to take the IEC voter roll as it stands right now, or we're going to give you a couple of weeks to register if you aren't registered. And then we're going to take everyone on that roll and all your addresses, and we're just going to send you a blank ballot paper, blank. Okay. And you're going to be able to fill in that ballot paper as you please. And when we send it to you, we'll send you a return postage. Let's live in a world where the South African Post Office works. Mm-hmm. We'll send you a return postage, and you can drop that in your local post box or take it to your post anywhere, you know, your post office, and send that back. And that's how we're going to run the election. And over and above that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give the power to any political party, be it the DA, the ANC, the EFF, the ACDP, whoever. I'm going to give them the ability to knock on your door the day after that mail has been sent out with that ballot, and they know you've got it in your possession. And I'm going to allow them to say to you, hi, I'm from the DA. You know, you can do it in your Helen Ziller voice, Gareth.
Hello.
Hello, I'm from the DA, and I would like your vote. You know, so that I'm going to allow Helen Ziller to knock on your door and convince you to vote for her and give her your ballot in her hand. Now, all those things happened in the United States. Okay, those things happened. We would not allow them in South Africa, and we would not call democracy. All right. Over and above that, there are a number of statistical variables which do not play out accurately for Joe Biden to win this election. So bellwether states that have never been wrong, essentially, getting it completely wrong, but like all of them. There's a statistician, I think I stand to be corrected, but he's at one of the Ivy League universities, and he worked out that the chance of Biden flipping the election after Trump's lead going into about 2 o'clock in the morning before, you know, all the shenanigans supposedly took place was one in a quadrillion. One in a quadrillion was his chances of flipping one state. One in a quadrillion to the power of four was his chances of flipping all six. So there just are too many things. And look, the problem is that elections are contemporary. So you win an election today or tomorrow. 4 weeks later, 8 weeks later, to argue about it is essentially a waste of time. The reality is that Robert Mugabe knew this very well. If you can just hold on to the firestorm for a week, you have won. And yes, people will forever go, oh, remember the 2000 and X election. It wasn't legitimate, but you'll still be the president. And so that's, in my
that's
view,
all
what
that matters.
Place.
Yeah. I mean, Canton, do you have any updates on the U.S. election from your point of view?
Yeah, look, I think the media keeps getting into frenzies based on the fact that there are these range of lawsuits that have been brought by a number of people. But this Texas lawsuit is really the only significant one that actually matters. And it is going directly to the Supreme Court. And the reason why this actually matters is because Texas is actually arguing on the basis of constitutionality in terms of what the states, of what these disputed states actually ended up doing. Now, let me explain what that means. In terms of the laws around how you're meant to vote in each of the respective states, everyone should be able to vote in exactly the same way. But what you've had is a scenario where some counties change the rules. And Texas is basically arguing that this violates the Equal Protection Clause of the United States Bill of Rights. And therefore, this ends up being invalid. And Texas has now been joined in this lawsuit by 17 other states.
Mm-hmm.
Taking it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Right.
And so this is going to be the one to actually end up watching because and Texas is basically saying that because of the fact that you had differences in voting rules in each of these different counties, that's why you ended up with voting irregularities. And they're wanting people, the Supreme Court, to say Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin violated the Constitution, and therefore they want those results to be overturned. Now, 17 other states also doing the same thing. It's going to be an interesting turn of events.
That's
the only one we need to watch.
Do you have any feelings on the way this is going?
Well, it's not a feeling. It's just an observation that actually – and first, I want to tell you about in Zulu tradition, you know, when you see, if you see the nakedness of an old person, the idea is that you will have bad luck follow you for the rest of your life, right?
Yeah, I can believe that.
It's called ipati. And the reality is, no matter what the outcome of this election is or any of the court cases are, essentially, Americans have had a front view. You know, the skirt of American democracy has been lifted. And we've all gotten to see the nether regions of the grand old lady that is America and the liberty in the US. And the long-term effect is that there is a chipping away of the belief in democracy for a lot of people, whether you believe the election was stolen or not, whether you believe the constitutional rights of people were compromised or not. The reality is, going forward, a lot of people are going to be very suspicious about how democratic is the U.S.
so,
really,
so
and how does that electorate system of theirs really work.
So we've seen the
bad
nakedness.
Luck, guys.
We've seen the nakedness of this ugly old man. And whether it's Biden or Trump, it's an ugly old man.
And it's a bad omen for democracy around the world.
Now, two things I want to point out. Firstly, Pumi, you're doing cultural appropriation. The story of seeing the old man naked comes from the Bible. Noah. Okay, Jonathan will.
I don't know. I have to check one of those books back there.
Because No. It's in Genesis chapter 9, verses 20 to 27.
Fuck that, eh?
Yeah, because Noah got drunk and passed out. And while he was passed out, his kids went and covered him with a cloak. And he said, how dare you cover me with a cloak while I was naked? Because that meant you saw me naked. And so he cursed the kid. And that's where, Canaan came from. But guys, going back to this whole question of the Supreme Court case, here's the reason why this is actually pivotal, because the Supreme Court would have been extremely reluctant to rule against an individual state, because then that would be directly meddling with the internal affairs of the state. And there's the entire separation of powers thing that kicks in. However, when you have some states taking on other states, that's when the Supreme Court is meant to step in. So they can't actually be accused at that point of trying to tilt the election in a particular direction.
Right.
And purely on the basis of law, if you take a look at the papers that now have been filed before the Supreme Court by Texas, they have a compelling case based on the law of the United States. And given that we have a Supreme Court in the United States that is filled with constitutional originalists, in other words, what that means is they will try and interpret whatever is brought before them along the lines of what did the founding fathers actually intend when they drew up this constitution. And on that basis, I think that there's a very strong possibility that they could actually strike down particular results in those particular states as violating the United States Constitution. And that is going to be a very interesting turn of events.
Well, I'm afraid
Kamala Harris, hardest hit.
Yeah, we are out of time. But just closing comments, because we've got only a few burning platforms until the end of the year. And next week, we've obviously got a public holiday. I think it's the Day of Reconciliation or something like that, which is kind of meaningless.
It's one of the most violent days I have ever spent in any hospital.
guys, just so you know,
dread the 16th and 17th more than I do Christmas and New Year.
Really? Are those the worst days?
Yeah, I worked a night of the 16th once where I ran, 4 theaters concurrently, all with stab or gunshot chests.
Jesus. So those are
the
days.
It was quite the evening.
So in other words, if you're going to go to a super spreader event, don't go on the 16th or 17th. Those are the days where the hospitals are overwhelmed.
People seem to be particularly violent. That day and Valentine's Day are the two most violent days in South Africa.
That's outrageous. I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
My goodness.
You want gender-based violence to reverse, you need to combat Valentine's Day.
Sure.
By the way, guys, this is a polite reminder that we are once again into 16 days of virtue signaling.
Yes.
So
good point.
Brace yourself.
A lot of people who loved Jonathan's point about humans and their inability to take personal responsibility for things. And I think that maybe that's the biggest division these days in politics, is between people who want someone to look after them and people who want to rather just get on with it themselves and take responsibility. And I know that we're going to be debating and discussing this philosophically for many episodes of The Burning Platform, but we're almost at the end of the year, and I do want us to find optimistic reasons to get through the last month of 2020 and look to at least a few things in 2021 which may bring us progress and relief. But we'll get to that in the next episode, I'm afraid. There isn't time in this one. So thank you very much, Pumi. Thank you very much, Canthan. Thank you, Jonathan Witt. CliffCentral.com.